Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends, coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the Beehive of Cultural Awareness, known formally as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon Broadcast Studio in the bustling and always bodacious heart of our pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together we, the Briefly, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Let's see, why don't we dive in and make sure everybody knows who's here today. First of all, our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, recently... Recently returned. You've been here from Florida for over a month now.
Oh, yeah, it's been a month.
We'll update that for next time in August when I'm hosting next. and longest serving Briefly, Truman O'Brien is here.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm here.
All right, we'll do better on this next introduction. Historian, professor, down under aficionado, party animal, and even now more in demand than ever, our guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman, is here.
Good to be here.
Great to have you here. Legal Beagle mediator, Fulbright scholar, Craig Bellis is here.
Good to be here. It sounds like we got a lot on the agenda today, the way we're trying to move through this quickly here.
It's a lively day today.
Yeah, all
right. We are blessed with also part-time Politico, ferry fixer, affordable housing advocate, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, returning Amy Dreyer.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'm Kevin Jones, Mariner backpacker, and now my 10th time in a rowing single without flipping.
Oh.
Whoa!
Way to start the countdown. Mm-hmm. Way to beg.
That's right. Knock on wood. I've seen two boats go over so far in a year and a half. So, can be survived, but so far I've dodged the bullet.
Can't spin those around like a kayak.
No. I will have to say that I saw an amazing demonstration of single boat handling on the water by Coach Aiden. And it was, if you could dance on the water, Aiden was doing it.
Wow.
Pretty awesome. Let's see, before we cover the news of the day in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion, let's first check in with the Brieflies and about how things are going this week. Truman, maybe you could lead us off.
Yeah, sure. You know, over the past year, I've regaled you with tales of my appliances failing.
Oh, yes.
And all of that. Well, I have another one, only this is not an appliance. Yes, I awoke Sunday morning to my wife saying, "Why don't we have much water pressure in the kitchen?" Well, of course, it wasn't just in the kitchen. It's the whole darn house. Okay, well, so I took a hike back to the well house, 650 feet back in the woods, expecting to find a tree again on the well house. No, but I did hear water spraying, and the well house is soaking wet. And luckily, it did not spray down the circuit breaker panel, so I could turn the pump off without getting my eyes lit up. But anyway, got it off. Well, it was just a cracked fitting. And it, you know, about 30 years ago, I plumbed in a whole house filter, and it was one of those fittings. I don't know why it broke. And there's a little vibration, you know, the pump. I think maybe it just fatigue broke. But so anyway, it took me most of the morning to hiking back and forth to rebuild that whole section and get it. But I got it working, so there you go.
30 years, things tend to break.
Yeah, they tend to break. Yeah, it's been
volcanoes
a while.
In Italy.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that's what it was. Yeah, it ended up going off.
Causation is not correlation.
That's it.
Correlation is not causation. How many trips back and forth to the toolbox and the well house?
Or to the lumberyard.
For plumbing supplies.
I have to admit that after my first hike back there up and down the valley and dale, or however they say that, hill and dale, I said, you know what? I'm not going to walk this thing again. I got my tractor out and I drove the tractor back. I think it was four trips, mm-hmm. which is not bad.
That's good for the tractor.
Yeah, indeed. I had to exercise it a little, you know. So.
Excellent. Oh, that was the voice of Bruce Allman. Bruce, how's your week been going?
Oh, it's been a good week. This Friday, my grandson, Theodore, is in the dance program at the Vashon Center for the Arts, and so that's always a kick. He's 7 years old, but he's turning into a classic ham. He loves being on stage. He loves the accolades from the audience and all that good stuff. And then last Tuesday night, I had the amazing experience of taking my granddaughter, Haven, to the Youth and Family Services free movies at the Vashon Theater to watch Wild Robot. And it's a great service that Vashon Youth and Family Services is doing. They're, I think, every couple weeks or once a month, they're doing a free kids movie on Green Tech Tuesday. And what was amazing is it doesn't cost to get in, and every kid gets a ticket for a Mighty Mouse, which is a little sort of tray of popcorn and a candy bar and a drink. Oh. And so she was ecstatic. So it was great fun. And then last Friday, summer is finally here. We made our first trip in my friend's speedboat to the Tides Tavern for lunch.
Yay.
So, and this is the 82nd year of the Tides Tavern sort of being the Tides Tavern.
Really?
Was, yeah, 52. Wrong number. 52.
It's still
a long time.
I think the first time I was there was... Well, back in 75, maybe?
Yep, that would have been about
it. So what was that?
Yep. They had just opened a Tides Tavern.
First time I was there, 75.
75,
It moved to Gig Harbor.
What's interesting about the Tides Tavern is it's been there a long time as a tavern, but it was won in a poker game.
And
the guy who won it changed the name to the Tides Tavern, and the family has owned it ever since. His kids are running it now, and it's a great place for lunch. So, summer is here.
Yeah, I love that, and a great place to tie up.
It is.
Right. And there's always a bunch of people out there on the dock. I have to tell you, my wife's father built a house on a lot that was won in a poker game by her grandfather. So there you go. Poker games can be wonderful things.
We saw people. I remember I was out there in the 70s and watched, I think it was like a group of fraternity brothers or something. And I think they either rented or borrowed one of their parents' sailboats. And they decided that they were going to take off under full sail.
From the dock,
and smashed into every boat within 30 feet, and people were running out there to try to save their money, get as many fenders out as you possibly could.
But if you drink enough beer, it's okay.
Good sailing adventures are always good adventures. Craig, so other than that, how's your week going?
Oh, I had a fabulous week. I went down to Ashland to where my our daughter and son and granddaughter live, and helped them move their new camper trailers from there out to a campsite that they rent every summer for the entire summer. Just south of Crescent City, California, and my daughter has a 26-foot used trailer that I helped her find, and she needed somebody to haul it down there, so that's what the dad was for. Mm-hmm. So I went down there, and then we got down to the campsite, got it all set up, and everything is copacetic. Mm-hmm. Went out to the lighthouse in Crescent City, did a lot of walking on the beach out there, and just had a wonderful time. Mm. Oh.
Sounds fantastic. Amy, welcome back to the show. And
Thank you.
How's things going with you?
Thank you. Pretty good. Well, we sold a house, so that's nice have that off. And
I thought you looked a little more flush.
Yeah,
than normal.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally. Well, guess what? In the theme of illicit gambling winnings, I won Shake-A-Day at the Eagles on Friday night.
Whoa!
Yeah, which is the Yahtzee. It's the rollover Yahtzee game where you get, three chances to roll Yahtzee and you win the pot. It's like a dollar buy-in. You buy in once a day. So, yeah, look at me. I'm I'm a winner. It's the most I've ever won in my life is like $600.
Wow.
I know.
Whoa.
Yeah, come on down. You got to be a member to play, but you got to play to win, I guess.
That's it.
Yeah, so that was pretty good. And I was just thinking, I was looking around it. Everybody's got nice, freshly clipped hair, kind of looks like. And I was thinking, it's been 3 months since my last haircut. For no other reason except sloth.
Which is always a good reason.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking there's maybe some kind of derby that could potentially be involved with either Amy cutting her hair or not cutting her hair.
Oh.
Right? Some kind of wager that could be offered out there into the world around... you know, now it's a total mess. So
does the winner actually get to do the cutting?
Could be. I mean, it could be. It's all out there. I'm laying it out there, Vashon.
Scissors only, razors allowed?
Whatever.
Rules here? Okay.
We'll see whoever's got the best proposal. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you are a advocate of single home ownership, not double home ownership.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that's like, I've been in the double home ownership business too long.
Yeah.
Not currently, but it was a little trepidatious there trying to move to Vashon.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, so everybody, you know, we're rolling up like the Beverly Hillbillies in July 4th weekend. We're going to, you know, and we were going to rent a U-Haul and just drive it up, do it ourselves. And then I looked at the cost of U-Haul, $2,000 to drive a U-Haul from Denver to Seattle. And so I think we're going to look at those, you know, the pod deals because they drive it themselves and it's the same price.
You know, U-Haul got rid of their motto. Adventures in moving.
Yeah.
Because most people thought that's the last thing I want.
That's right. It's enough of an adventure as it is.
Good point.
Yes, good marketing there. Well, speaking of moving, I will say that this week is a Miyoko Matsuda has now moved off island, and Matsuda Farms, and I think may still be a family member who at least spends some time on Vashon associated with the Matsuda Farms, but we wish Miyoko very well in her new adventure, living overtown with her daughters. And and other family members. So I wanted to just mention that. For my week, I had my first... I was on stage at the Vashon Center for the Arts, actually. Yeah, this Saturday, they had the Artist Table, which is the fundraiser for the student arts programs. And I was bussing tables.
Oh.
Yeah, my first gig as a waiter busser. And I have to tell you that it was awesome to be able to see folks in the crowd there on stage that, hey, it's been a while. You know, so yeah, that's a lot of fun. I went to the Indivisible Vashon Protest Drum Corps practice there at Sheffield Building, and Sheila Brown stopped by. And Sheila brought her drum, which has got a lot of experience in a lot of different protests, as you might imagine, given Sheila's political leanings. So it was great to see Sheila, of course, and hopefully she'll join the drum corps action when that's coming up. But otherwise, mowing the grass and getting ready to go out on the boat and riding my bike and a lot of rowing. So it's been so far so good. It's definitely looking more summerish. You mentioned.
All right, so I have a question for everyone. How many of you have worked waiting tables?
Well, yeah.
Yes, there's one.
Today, right?
Have you?
I don't know if you do that at the Eagles
Bruce,
or not.
It's a volunteer.
Only as That's a volunteer. A
same here, only as a volunteer.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, but you, did you make a living at it, Amy?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. So yeah. I'm just...
Wait a minute, did you make a living at
it? No, she did not make a living at it.
Yeah, I was young. But
you
couple earned, service earned industry.
Money. Yeah, I've had two different gigs as a waiter. Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah, everyone should do it. At least
I agree.
Once.
I agree.
Yeah, well,
they say it's a good job, except for the customers.
Well, it depends. I've had some wonderful experiences.
I'm just kidding.
Had a few bad ones as well.
That's the nature of retail, actually. Yeah.
My favorite feedback, not for mine, but just you know, chatting up the folks at Sporty's, they got a, I think it was a Yelp review or some review, or somebody said the pancakes are too big.
They are too big, but they're wonderful.
Big. There's no question.
And then what's
that.
Wrong with that?
Right. Exactly. Take it home. Come on.
Hey, you know, I was going to ask you, Amy, the time you spend there at Eagles, what's your favorite karaoke song that you sing?
Oh, I don't sing.
Well, come on. No.
Well, no, we don't. So
well, you said you didn't dance, and we found out that you did.
Poorly. No, so they're not doing the karaoke right now. Because it was Jennifer and Tammy, you know, did the Washington State Fairies. And the Fairies have been retired, I think, since COVID. But I think usually in the winter, sometimes they bring back the karaoke because it's, you know, but. Yeah, it's no longer the Fairies.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I know. I don't really have a karaoke song, and everybody is happier for that.
Okay, well, maybe it could fit in with the hair cutting thing.
There we go.
Another fundraiser, right?
Right, yeah. You got all kinds
I'll
of
I'll sing while someone cuts my hair. The Barber of the Eagles.
Seville.
Barber of the Eagles. Awesome. Let's see. Let's also check in to see what hope and inspiration we can conjure up from history and the day of the week. So today is June 3rd. It turns out is Love Conquers All Day.
Hmm.
So make sure to keep that in mind as you you know, go about town and you know, get home to your family and your loved ones. It's also National Egg Day. It's National Chocolate Macaroon Day.
Mm-hmm.
It's World Bicycle Day.
Oh.
So I've been getting my road miles in, so I'm happy to see that today. Also, Anderson Cooper and Allen Ginsberg both share a birthday today.
Oh.
So a couple of notables. Let's see. Today in history, Aretha Franklin's cover of Otis Redding's Respect hits number one in 1967 on the musical front. On the in the baseball scene, today is a big day on a lot of different occasions. 1851, New York Knickerbockers debut the first baseball uniforms ever. And in 1888, Casey at the Bat was first published in the San Francisco Examiner. 1932, Lou Gehrig first to hit four consecutive home runs in a Major League Baseball game.
Wow.
That's been something to see. And in 1955, not to be outdone, Stan Musial hits his 300th home run.
Wow. So that was a big summer for home runs.
Mm-hmm. A lot of baseball in
New York
today.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. Mickey Mantle. And
right.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just going to tell you one quick thing. I was never a huge baseball fan growing up, and we were in San Francisco, and oh, gosh, I just went blank on his name. Was pitching. But anyway, my only other baseball, when I'd been in Vietnam maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, when we had four or five huge name baseball players stay at my unit. Mm-hmm. Hank Aaron was one. I got to shake his hand.
Wow,
I
nice.
Think I've told that before. And,
back when he was with probably the Milwaukee Braves.
Probably, yeah. And he had a home run record as well, right, Hank Aaron? Anyway, that I always found that fascinating to meet those. Harmon Killebrew, that was the other one that was there. And who was the coach for the New York Yankees? No, later became a coach for them. Anyway, he was a baseball player. He was there. I'll think of his name in a minute. Anyway, that's my story.
All right, cool. Also in sporting news, 2017, on this day, climber Alex Honnold free solos El Capitan.
Oh, is Alex still with us?
I would not. I had done that research. I know the year after they made a movie of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Because we did lose a few free climbers.
It's a risky sport.
Boy.
For sure. Yeah. I think there's some others that are more risky, but wow, you're pushing the envelope on that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, let's see, British history, 1937, Duke of Windsor marries American socialite Wallis Simpson, and much history came after that, of course, as Britain entered World War II. Wasn't known by that name at the time. And in 1940, the last British and French troops evacuated from Dunkirk on this day in history. In 1946, the Supreme Court of the United States, segregation by race on interstate buses was declared unconstitutional. May it ever be so. And in 1989, the Tiananmen Square Chinese troops opened fire on pro-democracy supporters. And we used to talk a lot about China's democracy movements, and it looks like the Chinese autocracy is prevailing, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And a last historical perspective, 1965, the first U.S. spacewalk from Gemini 4 by an astronaut named Ed White. You may or may not know that name.
And Alex Honnold is still with us.
Good.
He's only 39, by the way.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for that internet research.
Sometimes I'm sure he's referred to as Alex Handhold.
I'm certain of it.
Probably seems appropriate.
Yeah.
Since there are no pitons allowed.
That's right.
Climbing. Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's move on to Around Town. Amy, now that another layer of legislative dust has settled, I wonder what you can share with us about your ferry fixer successor, and who is that person, and how did things go in the legislature? Just sort of a wrap-up for us.
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, you know, we're waiting for this month. We're going to get the third boat back, which is great. We know there'll be gaps. We know there'll be service gaps, but three boats is better than two any day. And you know, we'll also, if and when something drops out, we may or may not have access to the ghost boat. But I think tomorrow even we'll get settled on the final revised two boat schedule, which is, you know, no great shakes, but better. Right. And hopefully it's an emergency two boat schedule again. It's not like months and months and months of operating. We do know next spring one of the boats is going to go out. But again, three boats should be back on that three boat schedule, and the two boat will be hopefully just an occasional blip in the radar. The water taxi, the midday water taxi, should continue. And it should. Basically, we think the midday water taxi will continue. The dust has not settled within King County in terms of our funding. So they're doing a little bit of back and forth around the funding. But there still is potentially even better news for us to announce around the water taxi. But we're on hold for that. But do expect the midday to continue at least another year, which is fantastic news. And for Islanders for Ferry Action, we will continue in an all-volunteer capacity. So, you know, we'll kind of be probably looking for folks to see who wants to join up and take some leadership roles. But we're really kind of excited about the coalition that we've built. You know, I'll continue to work with the regional coalition and the legislative coalition. So, you know, kind of, you know, once a year we'll ramp up for session and lobby around session. And, you know, Wendy is always keeping her eye on WSF to, you know, kind of hold them accountable. She is so incredibly persistent at raising the flag and saying, hey, hold on here. Let's do that. And Rick and Beth, of course, with messaging and political connections and all of the other things we need. Such an incredible team. I really, you know, working with those folks, really, really a highlight. So really enjoyed that and what we got done. So that's kind of where we are with the ferries. But stay tuned on that PO boat. As soon as the county gets themselves sorted, we'll let folks know.
Okay.
Yeah, but we should continue to expect the midday water taxi.
Good.
Yeah.
And you are now fully transitioning as executive director of Vashon Household as of yesterday?
I am, yeah. I was a quote-unquote part-time the last couple months, and full-time in the chair as of yesterday.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they say. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink.
Our condolences.
Yeah.
We're not quite sure yet.
Yeah.
It'll unfold here shortly.
It will. There's some really good challenges to face, you know, obviously because of external circumstances. But, you know, we're really, I think, going to focus on making our resident experience as tip-top as we can.
There you go.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I see more cars now at 188th, so I see people are moving in. So
yeah, awesome. Yeah. Island Center Homes is, we're leasing it up. I think we have about one a week we get an ad. It's difficult to place because it is, you know, I always thought I was familiar with acronym use, but now in the actual government, it's a little bit nuts, and the hoops that folks have to jump and that we have to jump to get folks housed up is a little bit intense, but we're committed, and Rachel's great at doing that.
Well, I can say one thing, that is that they are very, very lucky to have you at the helm, because you will get things done.
Thank you. We got some stuff to get done, so thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Well, speaking of getting other things done, the legislative session was kind, finally, to a couple of island organizations. Backbone Campaign, namely, has been working on rail transportation improvements for quite a while. And the Amtrak Cascades route, which actually runs north and south, not east and west, up and down the I-5 corridor. There's new goals for the Amtrak Cascades to meet by 2035, which basically provides more service between Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver, BC at a higher on-time performance rate that they need to put in place. The goal is by 2035. So you can think about getting that car, leaving that at home, and being able to take the train as long as we have, right, the kind of water taxi service that can get you to the rail depot. The other thing is the right to repair. Zero Waste Vashon has been working for several years now to basically convince people who produce electronic devices to also be able to provide parts and instructions on how to replace those devices. Apparently, there is, from Washington State alone, 174,000 tons of electronic waste per year and 8,700 discarded phones per day.
Per day?
Just in Washington State per day, according to the information that I received from them. So I can imagine if even a portion of that waste stream can be repaired, then it doesn't go in the landfill. So hooray for that. Bruce, you've got some news.
Oh, and Food Bank. The Food Bank got a great capital capital appropriation as well. So our 34th District legislators were putting in the time for us this year. Absolutely.
Cool. Great. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And Bruce, you had some announcements.
Sure. This Friday, the Heritage Museum is opening a special exhibit that will be up through the end of the year. And the title of it is, it's an interesting exhibit. The title of it is An Island Revered, Honor and Friendship, the Schwabach and Sherman Family Collection. So basically it's an exhibit of native artifacts found on Vashon Island, held by the Sherman family and by the Puyallup tribe. Mm. And it's an exhibit that's curated by Jim Sherman of the Sherman family, and he's sort of the curator of the Sherman family collection. He's a sixth-generation islander. The Sherman family was one of the first settler families to come to the island and accumulated a number of native artifacts over the years as gifts or as purchases. And so they have an incredible collection. And then we're working with Brandon Raynon, who is the director and tribal historic preservation officer for the Puyallup tribe, and Amber Hayward, who is a Puyallup tribe language director, to put this exhibit together. So the three of them are sort of curating the exhibit. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a fantastic collection of all the kinds of artifacts that the Schwabach people used primarily before contact with Europeans and American settlers. And I have this just wonderful quote. I'm going to take a minute and read this because I think it really touches what this is all about. And this is from Brandon Raynon. He says, "Even in the darkest rooms, light will shine. For the Schwabach, the arrival of Pasted, non-natives," that's the Tulutsi word for non-natives, "brought the darkest times in their history. As historians, it is our duty to tell the stories that occurred on our lands, both good and bad, for all future generations to learn from. While there are plenty of stories that tell of deception, crime, and persecution of the Schwabach, the story here with the Sherman family is that of the light for the Schwabach. The gift from the Schwabach to the Sherman family on display in this exhibit showcase the very essence of the native community. Trade with those you trusted and befriended was the paramount foundation of our communities. The Sherman family collection, along with artifacts unearthed throughout the years, tell the story of the ingenuity, sophistication, and honor that is the Schwabach, the people of the Swiftwater." Wow. So it'll be a great exhibit. So Friday evening, a museum will be open from 4 to 7. At 5 o'clock, there'll be kind of a ceremony recognizing the curators, so Jim and Amber and Brandon. So it's worth, on First Friday, lots of other things going on, worth taking a moment and walking over. And then it'll be up for the next, six, 7 months. So it's worth taking time to visit the museum when you have more time and see this exhibit. It's a very special kind of thing that's taking place. Thank you.
And whereabouts is it going to be? I know it's in the museum. But
it's in the back.
But you have your permanent exhibit. Is it in the back?
Sure. Yeah, the back area of the museum is where we have special exhibits. Okay. It's where we had the election exhibit. It's where we had,
where we had
the small exhibit of artifacts from the collection chosen by the collection staff.
Okay.
So the back part behind the map, the digital map, is where this will be. And it should be an incredible exhibit.
Right.
Okay, so folks who are planning to do that on First Friday, two blocks west, down Bank Road, on the left, the Vashon Heritage Museum, short walk past the fire station, and the museum is just right there.
Right there.
Very convenient.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, absolutely. All right, so let's see. There's some other national news that we haven't talked about for a little while. And so that's what we're going to dive into next. And Craig, we're going to rely a lot on your legal knowledge and background here to provide commentary on some of these things. But on May 27th, Heather Cox Richardson posted an eye-opening summary of the current administration's federal court track record. Some data around that. Stanford political scientist Adam Bonica noted last Friday, which should be now a week ago, that Trump and the administration suffers a 96% loss rate in federal courts in the month of May. Bonica's data indicates that judges across the ideological spectrum are ruling against Trump in similar rates. He's lost in 72% of rulings from Republican-appointed judges and 80% of rulings by Democrat-appointed judges. So, interesting data point. But, Craig, while other co-equal branches of government seem destined to fail to provide a check on the administration, the courts appear to be successful. What do you think?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Those statistics bear it out, and the tradition of the courts bear it out to a certain degree. The current administration thinks that because Trump has appointed all these judges, that they're all going to side with him on whatever he does, and that is not the traditional role of the judiciary.
Yes, try to say that three times fast.
We're all having those troubles today.
I was having some articulation challenges.
That's right. Peter Pepper picked the. He's particularly disappointed, I think, in Amy Coney Barrett because she's ruled against him on a couple of things initially. But judges, for the most part, I mean, there always have been exceptions in history, but judges and parts of the country, I might add, have really taken their job seriously in terms of ruling based on the facts and the law and doing their best to do it and let the chips fall wherever they may. Mm-hmm. I remember once I had a client, was from the East Coast. He was from New Jersey. It wasn't a criminal matter, it was a civil matter, and he asked me, he said, well, can't we arrange for this case to be decided in my favor? Mm-hmm. And I said, arranged? I'm not exactly sure. He goes, well, I have lots of resources, I have lots of money, and I go, it's not the way it's done in Washington State, But the judges have done have really just pointed out about how unlawful or unconstitutional so many of the actions of the Trump administration have been, and they will continue to do so until the legislature is successful in altering their power.
I think my question is, how many of these rulings has Trump actually complied with, though? When they have said no, how many of them has he actually complied with?
That's the question that always arises. That's the so-called, that is the constitutional conflict and question, that crisis, if you will, that we're all waiting for. And you asked the question, has it already happened? Has he just ignored them? For the most part, he's been able to finesse them without outright ignoring them. For example, the facilitation of bringing the gentleman back from mm-hmm. the
Mr. Garcia.
Yes,
from
right.
El Salvador. Yes,
from El Salvador, and all that talk about what a facilitation means and everything that you know the sophistry that goes on there. They're skirting him, but they're not outright saying I'm not going to obey them. We haven't quite got to that crisis as yet.
Yeah, but I mean, sorry, Bruce, but you know, it's sort of. Is it meaningful? Are these rulings in fact meaningful?
Yeah, I think they are.
Right.
I really do. They have stopped. Yeah. They have stopped a lot of activity from occurring.
And it's the nature of the American judicial system is that appeals become an important part of it. And I mean, Trump has sort of become the master of the appeal in his own personal life, and it can play out for a long period of time. But these are of such immediate sort of impact that I think ultimately we're going to see relatively shortly, the courts are going to sort of call it up to question unless this new sort of beautiful big bill is, which sort of exempts government officials from being held in contempt of court. That's going to change the dynamics.
So my question is, if you have three equal partners in the government, how is the legislature changing one of the third parts?
We have three supposedly equal branches of government. That doesn't mean that one branch doesn't have some authority over the other branch. I mean, obviously, the courts have the authority determine when laws are unconstitutional.
Sure.
And therefore, they're kind of stepping on the legislature. The legislature has a constitutional provisions in Articles 1 and 2 that give them the authority to play with the jurisdiction of the lower federal courts, the district courts, the trial courts. And it goes on from there. You know, they overlap.
Yeah.
And what the crisis we're in right now is the nature of how much they overlap and how much authority they have over one another. This big, beautiful bill, and we all say that in quotes.
Choke on the words there.
Yeah, the one that's going to that would require bonds be posted by the plaintiffs who are suing the government, the federal government. A bond would have to be paid into the registry of the court before the court would be permitted to hold anybody in contempt for violation of its orders. That actually will have the effect of quashing it would put a major chill, if you will, on the ability of the courts in any action by a private citizen or a state against the federal government. Because it'd only be a state who might actually be able to afford that bond. But we're talking a lot of money that would typically be required in order to pay that bond so that a court could enforce its orders. That would be something else. Now, the national, no national injunction rule you're familiar with. There's bills pending in Congress that would say that district court judgments only apply in the districts that those courts are in, and do not apply across the entire United States. And we've had that with the birthright opinions, like the ones that come right out of Seattle here, or out of Spokane. That's an interesting area. The legislature, for the most part, people think the legislature, Congress, has the authority to do that. And that's not a purely one-sided issue. Supreme Court Justice Kagan is not a big fan of nationwide injunctions. Because what happens is when the Democrats are in power and the Republicans want something to apply on a nationwide basis, they run to a Texas district.
Right.
And when the Republicans are in control and the Democrats want it nationwide, they go to the West Coast, they go to the Northern District of California, Ninth Circuit. Mm-hmm. So you've got, that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and And I mean, that idea of nationwide injunctions is relatively recent. I mean, that's a 20th century innovation in the courts, right?
It is. It's not one that there was any legislation on. It's just power that the courts arrogated to themselves and said, nothing says we can't do this, so we're going to do it. Hmm. And now the legislature is looking at the Republican, you know, Congress is looking at it and saying, well, we may tell you that you can't do it.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to circle back to one thing that Amy brought up and you commented on, Craig, and that was the budget bill has this poison pill in it, presumably, which would exempt the, let's see, I think that the best way to say this is that situation, if that bill passes, you'd create fear, the news created fears that the administration would be exempt from being held in contempt when they violate a court order. However, it appears the language of the bill would only apply if no security was given when the injunction or order was issued. And Craig, that's when you talked about a bond.
Right.
And one of the things I read was the bond could not necessarily be a lot of money. It could apparently be a fairly modest amount.
It could. The proposed statute that I've seen or I've read about hasn't really addressed the amount of the bond in any specifics. And the thought being that a sympathetic judge might place the bond figure at a very low number so that requirement would lose its teeth, the counter back and forth.
And I kind of follow-up question, the courts have been holding folks in contempt, but what does, if it's unenforceable and you're being held in contempt, but nothing is happening to stop you from your contempt?
Being contemptuous?
Yes, yeah. Right. What is really the point of holding, you know?
Well, the administrative, or I should say the government agencies, the heads of those agencies, the operatives in those agencies, can legally be placed in jail. Hmm. That's why the one judge who's been trying to find out who turned the airplanes around, trying to find out who exactly knew and who made the order and who did this, and now the federal government has asked for another 30 days, and they were denied that request for an extension on those 30 days. We're getting darn close to one actual monetary damages, and against the federal government, that's not such a horrible thing. But when it gets down to the people who are engaged in these activities,
when I see a white man in jail, I'll believe.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I understand accountability has been an elusive concept over the last few years.
Well, and one of the key crises that's going to come up is enforcement. I mean, the courts and the Congress don't have many boots on the ground, if you will. I mean, they've got a few. I mean, the Congress has a small sort of a, you know, police service. You know, the courts have what? I mean, there's a few court officials, but
it's irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got U.S. Marshals,
yeah, right.
But the U.S. Marshals aren't typically in the business of doing that against somebody like the federal government,
right? And who do the marshals report to? So it's really, and that's the ultimate sort of constitutional crisis. I mean, that's what happened under Andrew Jackson when he decided he was going to, you know, not follow the directions of the court, and then caved, of course, thank goodness. But it's never been put to the test.
That's why they have always said that it's a great government that we have, as long as people are willing to protect it and stand by it. A lot of the way our three-part government works is based on goodwill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you've got men and women of ill will, it starts to crumble.
Well, they have to respect the authority of whomever, correct?
Yeah, that's why I've always said, and I digress for a moment, the people talk about, oh, I really like Trump because I like his policy on this and I like his policy on that, and I don't really care much about his, you know, character and demeanor. I think you've got that backwards.
Yeah.
One's integrity and honesty means a tremendous amount in the way this government runs.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you mentioned earlier the fact that the article that we read from says sort of the judges appointed by both liberal and conservative administrations have been ruling kind of equally against some of the behaviors of the current administration. To what extent does lifetime, like, job security provide? I would think that that may definitely play a role in terms of...
You mean federal judges?
Federal judges,
tenure?
Lifetime tenure?
Lifetime tenure.
How important is that in this
notion? It means a lot. I always use the example of probably the most liberal Supreme Court justice we've had in, almost a century, William O. Douglas. William O. Douglas was the chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission before he became a Supreme Court justice and was considered a rank conservative. And when people become federal judges, they don't get power hungry. I'm not suggesting that. Mm-hmm. But they recognize that they don't owe anything to anybody. The only thing they owe their allegiance to is the law, the Constitution, and the facts. Mm-hmm. And it gives them the freedom to do that.
You know, this is all related. I think back to when I was a park commissioner on the island. I went with a specific agenda in mind. And once I got into that position, I realized how broad and varied all of the actions were. And it changed my opinion. And I see that happening all the time. And I think the same thing happens no matter what position of government you're in. I mean, there's obviously some, leaning toward one direction or the other. But I think that occurs. You get a broader view.
Yeah, I agree. I don't mean to be too Pollyannish about the judges.
Yeah,
obviously, you come there as a human being with your value
biases.
System. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to separate yourself from, mm-hmm. from some of your preconceived ideas. But but you do your best. Mm-hmm. There are other parts of government, for example, the U.S. Attorney's Office, where if you would suggest that we sent that person off to El Salvador, without having given them due process, you're toast.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to recount a few other stories that are in the news about the administration being held to account. Apparently, states can proceed with their lawsuit against Elon Musk's, alleging that there is no law. The lawsuit alleges there's no law that allows a unilateral creation of a federal agency. So we hear about DOGE and Elon Musk. Maybe he's leading it. Sometimes it depends on who you ask or who answers the question. But apparently there is a lawsuit that the states have brought that says you just can't do that. You can't just go create a new federal
agency. That's the balance of power that we've been talking about.
Right.
That was the legislative branch's job to do. The executive... the executive has authority over the executive agencies, but it doesn't have power over the purse, for one thing, or for agencies of the federal judiciary or legislature. Mm-hmm. So, and I understand that the egos have started to clash. I just read a news report this morning that said that Elon Musk considers the big, beautiful bill, how did he say it, absurd and something like that, and just an abomination.
That's not beautiful.
No. Not okay. beautiful at all, an abomination. So.
Okay, well, there's another interesting turn of events. Apparently, the administration was targeting a law firm that Robert Mueller was formerly a part of, and you may recall Robert Mueller as being very involved in investigating Trump's relationship with Russia leading up to his first win And so apparently the administration has now been barred from targeting that particular law firm. So in this retribution activities that we're seeing, at least that's one roadblock.
All the law firms holding. That have taken him on because they wanted to prevent them from the law firms from engaging in federal contracts or even entering into federal buildings have prevailed. And the law firms that caved and allegedly agreed to some ridiculous number of hours of volunteer work, pro bono work, they're left out there in the cold. And I think you and I talked about this a little before. Were you gonna say something about that?
Well, you know, the news says that the Wall Street Journal, in fact, I guess it was this last Sunday, reported that big companies are running away from those law firms, and companies like Oracle, McDonald's, Morgan Stanley, and even Microsoft locally. And so, what is behind that abandonment of those?
Do you really want a law firm that's beholden to the federal government? If you're negotiating or doing business with the federal government all the time, do you really want a law firm that's going to fold that quickly to threats, or do you want one that's independent and is courageous? So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty clear.
You know, there's a history of appeasements not working out. The most I've read is having to do with the British appeasing Hitler prior to World War II starting up. But are there other good historical examples of appeasement failures that we come to mind?
Oh, that's interesting. I've never thought of that in those terms. I'm sure there must be, but that's, you know, the sort of Neville Chamberlain, you know, peace in our time, you know, walking off the airplane, you know, but 6 months later, World War II begins. It's sort of the ultimate sort of test of appeasement.
Mm-hmm. Sure, there was something in Game of Thrones, but I can't think of
it. I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, before we give the big companies a round of applause, it is worth noting that all of them have fled from their DEI commitments financially. Right. Mm-hmm. Almost all large corporations have fled.
Did Target though? Did they finally cave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. They just.
But I know they were fighting it for a while.
Yeah. In private matters, in terms of their marketing dollars and you know what they're doing, and they've all pulled that back. And I wonder where that money's going.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Well, I did have a chance. There's a couple of UW professors that I know, and one that I recently did talk to. They were investing a lot of time right now in grant writing. And basically, given the uncertainty of federal dollars, right, to support universities, they're really seeking money to basically protect their grad students, right, and be able to continue the research, which is, of course, their ambition in life, too, right, is to do this kind of work. I was informed by one that the word selection is now something's very important in terms of removing words like equity and diversity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is it's unfortunate, of course, to see that kind of a turn of events.
Well, you know, just something I had never really thought about until you said this just now, but most of that research work, I mean, it's led by professors, but all the grunt work is done by the grad students, and probably many of them foreign. So, you know, that's got to have a huge effect. Huge.
Wow. Oh, yeah. My personal opinion, I mean, this attack on academia, attack on the universities, attack on scientific research that we see going on, it's going to change the balance of intellectual power in the world. I mean, this is as significant as, you know, sort of Pearl Harbor. You know, in terms of what's going to happen, in terms of a brain drain, in terms of, you know, research being cut off. I mean, it's going to be a disastrous thing for America. Since World War II, has dominated the world with intellectual property.
Yeah.
That's coming to an end.
It is. We are governed by a group who does not believe in soft power, which has perhaps been the most important since World War II.
Yeah, and given their business interests, and it's shocking to me that the notion that people that seem to not understand the relationship between scientific discovery that takes place in those universities and the ability to market and produce products that are
really valuable products and a lot of revenue.
Heather Cox Richardson's, I think, from yesterday talked about how the Russians and the Chinese back in the, 40s?
40s and 50s.
Yeah, 40s and 50s changed away from science totally in the agricultural area.
That's right.
And it ruined their economy and their agriculture and actually ended up in people, hundreds and thousands of people dying.
30 million.
That's hundreds of thousands of more and more,
Yes. Well, let me, before we jump into a couple of public service announcements here that Truman has queued up for us, just one item our listeners may have missed from last week, New York indictment of Donald Trump on May 30th for 34 felony counts. And I took a look at the calendar. I wanted to mention it since this item will not pop up on a Brown Briefly this day in history until 2028, which is coincidentally the presidential election year. So maybe we'll leave it for others to speculate on what we hope to be saying in 2028 on this day. Actually, it was May 30th in 2028 when we look back in history about that indictment of our current president. But let's see, a couple things coming up. We have a meeting of Indivisible Vashon on June 4th, where we are hosting Michael Mead, an amazing mythologist and storyteller. And Truman, if you want to cue that up and let folks hear what's coming up.
Indivisible Vashon invites you to an evening with renowned storyteller and scholar of mythology, anthropology, and psychology, Michael Mead. Michael will convey through the intrinsic power of storytelling the mythological perspective of our current political environment, followed by Indivisible Vashon leaders relating that perspective to actions we can all take together. We are experiencing challenging and foundation-shifting times, but nothing that has not been seen before through the eyes of history and human mythos. Our collective wisdom, creativity, and resilience will determine the outcome. Join this transformative movement in the Vashon United Methodist Church Sanctuary on Wednesday, June 4th, starting at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. This has been a Voice of Vashon public service announcement.
And let's thank Jeff Hoyt for pulling that together. Also, if you go out onto the Voice of Vashon's website, you'll be able to find that PSA and another one coming up, just in case you need to recollection that it is the Vashon Methodist Church. Doors open at 6:30. Program starts at 7 with Michael Mead.
And it's free.
It is free, yes. And Michael will tell a story that involves putting perspective our current events, and then we'll be chatting with Indivisible Vashon leadership about what they're doing to address those things. A couple other things. June 6th, first Friday, as Bruce, as you mentioned, a lot of things going on. Also, look for Indivisible Vashon members who will be showing up to hand out buttons and information about how to get involved in the just aforementioned work. We've heard that one member of the Indivisible Vashon Drum Corps is planning to show up. And if you are interested in joining the fun, then stop by and talk to Brian Long, who should be out there. Also, the basically to address the concluding remarks from Heather Cox Richardson's May 27th newsletter, which I will quote, "Every authoritarian who successfully destroyed judicial independence did so because civil society failed to unite in time. The key difference, whether people mobilized." And now we have another PSA about mobilizing on June 14th, right here on Vashon Island and in Olympia.
Members of Indivisible Vashon will be attending the No Kings demonstration on June 14th, both here on Vashon and at the state capitol in Olympia. Donald Trump, as you know, is planning a military parade on that day, which also happens to be his birthday and happens to fall on the 250th anniversary of the United States Army. Accordingly, the nationwide Indivisible movement is planning this No Kings demonstration for that day to push back against the obvious authoritarian display of power that will be on hand in Washington, D.C. Two actions are planned by Indivisible Vashon's chapter, a local demonstration here on the island that begins at Ober Park at 1:45 p.m. and marches to the four-way stop in town. Also, the chapter will attend the large demonstration at the state capitol in Olympia from 11 to 2. Transportation is organized through the Indivisible Vashon webpage, where attendees can arrange carpools. Drummers and percussionists of all ages and experience are welcome. You can look for info from Indivisible Vashon about how to make a drum from a 5-gallon bucket and learn some basic rhythms. Let's flood the zone, folks. For more information about the No Kings demonstration on June 14th, visit the Indivisible Vashon webpage at indivisiblevashon.org. This has been a Voice of Vashon public service announcement.
All right, and thank you for all those skilled experts at Voice of Vashon for making all those PSAs happen. Craig, I think you're hosting next week.
I am.
What's up?
It's going to be a big surprise.
Hey, stay
tuned. Is
that
because you don't know?
That may be because I've been out of town and I got to do some scrambling.
All right. Okay, fantastic. Well, we will all be here next Tuesday at 11 o'clock to enjoy the Brown Briefly and to share with you our views about how things are going in the world. So for Truman, Bruce, Craig, and Amy, I'm Kevin. We look forward to seeing you next week, and thanks for being here this week.